Thank you, Milton. My name is Howard A., and I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is July the 13th, 1953. You know, that's 41, well, nearly 42, be 42 in July. And that's really a great thing. It's a wonderful thing. When I started out, I just had one day. And I'll tell you more about that later. But I was amazed, really, at the number of people that stood up here and the number of years that they had. And Tom, I think you ought to appoint somebody next year with a calculator to put them down. I started out trying to keep up with them, and they kept going so fast, my calculator wouldn't keep up with it. But we must have 500 years in here. And that's really something. I don't know that I've ever been in a group this size that had as much longevity in sobriety. Jim, I hope you make it till December. He'll have 40 years. That's great. I was wondering if Milton didn't ask me to speak so that some of the younger ones might be able to see just what alcohol can do to a human being. But I hasten to add that alcohol, it wouldn't be fair to alcohol to blame it for all this, because after all, you know, it's great to be sober 40 years, but there's some drawbacks to it, too. I'm 41 years older than I was when I came in. And you can't have it both ways. I'll tell you, I'm 81 years old, and that's in my... I'll be 82 my next birthday. And it ain't all good, but it's generally been pretty good for me. Somebody was talking about their back going out yesterday, and I said, mine goes out more often than I do now. Everything hurts. What don't hurt don't work. Battery went dead in the car here a few weeks ago, and I had a serious battery in it, and I took it down there, and they said, that's a 5-year battery. And I didn't think it's 5 years old, but it 2 months passed, you know. That's like they always... And they came out there and said, well, we need to put you in another 5-year battery. And I said, no, I don't think so. That's being a little optimistic. I said, I think a 3-year battery might be stretching it somewhat. And the guy says, oh, no. I said, you need a 5-year battery. You make it. I said, no. At my house, we don't even buy green bananas. But I feel more like I do now than I ever have in my life. You know, there used to be a Nashville song, one of those rural songs, I feel better all over more than anywhere else. And I have been very fortunate with having been pretty well free of everything except gallbladder trouble and cancer and a few things like that. But the Lord seemed fit to see me through it, and I am sound as a bullet, as a Barney Fife bullet. I notice we've got some people here from north of the Mason-Dixon line. And they always have trouble with us, you know. They think we say "you all" for everybody. And we don't do that. And they'll argue with you about it. I don't know about these particular ones, but others I have known. And if I can think of how this thing goes, I want to... Maybe I better do another one. Last time I made a talk, I said, if I forget what I'm supposed to say, I've got some notes here. I pull them out. If I can't find it, I'll start reading chapter 5. But I left it in yonder. And the reason I left it is because I know it. Come all of you from near and far, both city folks and rural, and listen while I tell you this. The word "you all" is plural. When we say "you all must come down, or we shall all be lonely," we mean a dozen folks, perhaps, and not one person only. If I were to say to Hiram Jones, perchance, "you all is lazy," or "will you all lend me your knife?" he'd think that I was crazy. Now, if you'd be more sociable and with us often mingle, you'd find that in our native tongue, "you all" is never single. Now, don't think I mean to criticize or act as if I knew all. But when we speak of one alone, we say "you" like "you all." But we are delighted that they are here. And in connection with getting old, I thought of Robert Browning's "Grow Old Along With Me." The best is yet to be. The last of life for which the first was made. Our times are in his hand, who saith, "A whole I planned. Youth shows but half. Trust God, see all, nor be afraid." And I have found that true, that life does get better. My life's infinitely better now than it was even 10 or 15 years ago, and it gets better. The more I practice this program, or earnestly try to practice it, the better life gets for me. I keep forgetting more than I used to, and I really am disinclined to make talks because I forget somebody's name right in the middle of it. I got a friend over in Knoxville. She's from Mount Pinson, Sandy Palmer, and he sent me a thing here a while back that suits me to a T. So just a line to say I'm living, that I'm not among the dead. I'm getting more forgetful and mixed up in the head. For sometimes I can't remember when I'm at the foot of the stair if I must go up for something or if I've just come down from there. And before the fridge, so often, my mind is filled with doubt. Have I come to put some food away or come to take some out? Sometimes when it's dark out and my nightcap's on my head, I don't know if I'm retiring or just getting out of bed. So if it's my time to write to you, there's no need getting sore. I may think that I've written and I don't want to be a bore. But remember, I do love you and wish that you were here. Now it's nearly mail time, so I must say goodbye, dear. Here I stand beside the mailbox with my face so very red. Instead of mailing you my letter, I've opened it instead. I like my bifocal glasses. My dentures fit me fine. My hearing aid is perfect. But law, how I miss my mind. And that pretty well fits me. It puts an awful responsibility on a person like me to try to tell what I used to be like. That's asking a lot. That's a long time ago, and if I can remember right, I didn't even know what I was like then. I do remember that I was cattywampus and obstreperous. And I was a very even-tempered child, as I recall. I was mad all the time. And I kind of grew up that way. Now, this was before I even tasted alcohol. We had an alcohol rehabilitation program in the company I worked for, and they sent a fellow down here, a doctor, you know, and had me make some trips with him, and I kept talking about alcohol. And he said, "Do y'all call that alcohol down here?" I said, "No, we call it alcohol just like you do. When you hear me mispronounce a word, you know I did it on purpose." He was from the north. It's a strange thing. You'll remember Ralph Higgins, a lot of you, a great friend of mine. Anybody from north of Tennessee line was from up north. Now I live up north in Memphis. I lived in Birmingham most of my life, and Montgomery, 100 miles to the south, the cradle of the Confederacy, was South Alabama. And we moved from Birmingham to Mobile, right down on the coast. And they talked about Montgomery as being North Alabama. So it's all from our perspective. I didn't start drinking till I was about 16. Hoover was in. He was the president. Herbert Hoover. Herbert Clark Hoover. He was an engineer by trade, a graduate of Leland Stanford Junior University in Palo Alto, California, and an economics professor when I was in school. I went to college too. I'm reminded of what Joe White over in Atlanta says, "I ain't got no education, so I have to use my head." But Dr. Hawk said that President Hoover was the greatest engineer this country had ever seen. He drained, ditched, and dammed the country in 4 years. Now that's a little dated, but if you were older, you'd remember it, it'd be funnier. But I did start drinking in 1930. I say started drinking. I had a drink then, and it lit up all of West Jefferson County, it felt like. I was opposed to liquor. My father was a Methodist minister, and he wouldn't even want us to write the word down, you know. And he believed in hitting the liquor industry hard and every time you could. And I kind of grew up opposed to it, but then I had a drink and everything changed. And Prohibition was in. You couldn't buy whiskey or beer. I never saw beer for a great many years. I remember when it was legalized, everybody said the thing going around was, "Have you tasted beer yet?" You know, something new. They asked Mae West if she had tasted beer yet. She said, "Yes. And as far as I'm concerned, they can pour it back in the horse." Now, you can't get all this information out of language of the heart. But I did begin to drink, and didn't drink a great deal. I finished high school in 1932 at Jones Valley High School, and almost didn't graduate because we had a junior-senior reception, and I got drunk along with the four others, and the principal threatened not to let us graduate. But we conned him out of that and got away with it. And I drank off and on whenever I could find it. I know that if there was enough whiskey and I could get my hands on enough of it, I always drank to excess. I went through the various stages of drinking alcohol. In the beginning, when I drank too much, I got limber-legged and sick at my stomach, and I would regurgitate, a nice word, and throw up. And I remember one time lying on the ground, having been through all that, and somebody says, "He won't remember a thing about this tomorrow." And I knew every word they were saying and remembered it. Later on, as my drinking progressed, I got to the point where I became a daily drinker, and I could function pretty well. And I have had occasion where a person reminded me of or told me about a conversation I had with him, and he didn't even know I was drinking, and I had no recollection of it. And then I went into what I learned after I got into AA was a periodic. And they spoke of periodic like everybody knew what it was. That's one that really ties one on and finally can sober up, and so he doesn't drink for a while. And then something bad happens to him, or something good happens, or nothing happens. So he does it again. My last name is Aldridge, and after coming into AA, I began to try to look at the traits of the alcoholics as I understood them from the people I had met and from reading the big book. And I found that most all the traits that I could enumerate were characteristics of my Aldridge family. And after I had moved to Mobile, I'd been sober in AA several years, some friends there gave me a book of famous quotations. And in there was a poem by a fellow by the name of Henry Aldridge, the same name as my father, who lived about 1647 to 1711. The whole poem was in there. And the title was Reasons for Drinking. If all be true that I do think, there are five reasons we should drink. Good wine, a friend, or being dry, or lest we should be by and by, or any other reason why. I said, man, the alcoholism goes back in the Aldridge family a long way. But it is so true. I don't know that I need to dwell a lot on my drinking, except to say I had enough to get me here. But not like some of you, I didn't drink but 23 years. And we have some that say they've been drinking 50 years, you know. I couldn't have stood it that long. Chuck C. said he became a periodic by necessity. And that's the reason I became a periodic. I couldn't stand it all the time. I quit drinking many times. First place, I thought it was morally wrong. And the second place, it was causing me trouble. And so I would swear off with and without a solemn oath forever, never, ever drink again as long as I lived. And when I could get off of it and begin to get my health back a little bit, I did pretty good. And it didn't bother me. And I whistled in the dark, like the book says. Don't miss it at all, you know. And the next thing you know, something didn't happen again, and I drank again. And this went on and on many times. I was reminded of the two black crows. Two black crows were a vaudeville team that preceded or antedated radio, but not the phonograph. I've got their phonograph record. And one of them was telling the other about a farm they had. Said, we used to raise pigs on our farm. And he said, we'd buy pigs in April and we'd sell them in October. And the other one said, well, what did you pay for them in April? He said, $4. Said, what did you sell them for in October? He said, $4. Says, man, you can't make anybody that way. He says, yeah, we found that out. That's kind of the way my drinking was, you know. I found out. But that didn't do any good. I can't tell you why I am in AA today or what brought me to AA. Other than, I think it was a loving God, and people who cared, friends of mine who didn't leave me in spite of everything. There were two or three of those. Never berated me. Family, and my wife particularly. I got drunk on July the 3rd, 1953. I didn't intend really to get drunk. I just intended to have a few drinks, but it was the same way, $4, you know. I got drunk, and Saturday, I didn't feel too good, but that was all right. I didn't have to work Saturday, so I drank a little more. Sunday, I needed to get ready to go back to work Monday, and that didn't work out that way. And here it's Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, going into the next week, and here I am still there, nibbling that no-dose and drinking that air wick, as Dave Gardner used to say. But I was in an awful state of anticipated celibacy. I felt real bad. I didn't know what AA was. Other than I knew it was Alcoholics Anonymous. I've looked back and tried to think, if I didn't read the Jack Alexander article in the 1941 in the Saturday Evening Post, and I can't say whether I did or not, but I know I read some articles, at least one or two back then, along those lines, and my attitude toward it was, they don't know what they're talking about. Ask me. And during this period of time that I was drinking, and not getting any closer to getting sober, didn't look like. I would call in and report where I was going that day to Sandy Palmer. He sent me that poem, by the way. And I think he knew what was going on, but he didn't give me away. So Monday morning, the next week rolled around, and my wife took Tom as a child then and decided she'd enjoyed about as much of my company as she could stand at the time. So she took off, and I thought she was going to Dallas, Texas, and did until a few years ago. She told me she went to the Gulf Coast, or the other way around, I don't remember now. But as she started to drive off, she says, "Mr. Smith up here at the hardware store is a member of AA, if you want to go talk to him." Imagine that, my wife talking to me like that. "Mr. Smith?" I didn't want to go talk to Mr. Smith. But alcoholic-like, I did not do what you would expect me to do. I didn't do anything. I just let her drive off. I didn't respond. Well, this was the day for me to get sober, because I'd already called up my boss and told him I'm taking a week's vacation because I knew I couldn't work. And I hadn't much more than hung up that phone. I told him I was going to Texas, because that's where Evelyn was going, I thought. And a few minutes, phone rang. I thought, he's done double took this, you know, and he's calling back to talk to me a little bit more. And I wouldn't answer the phone. And I found out later that's exactly what happened. So he couldn't fire me if he couldn't find me, you know. So I had saved back a little bit of Old Hickory, about that much in a pint bottle. Not really a good drink, because I knew tomorrow I'm getting sober. And in order to do that, I need to clean myself up a little bit and shave my face. And I can't do it without some assistance. But I had been that route before too. And I knew if I drank that, I would waste it. It would come back. So being smart like I am, I poured half of it out in the glass and experimented with that. I swallowed that. And it did like MacArthur, it returned. And so I waited around a while and drank the other little nip of it, and it stayed down. I couldn't eat, I couldn't sleep, I couldn't sit still. I was really in bad shape. But I managed to get myself bathed, and finally to get shaved. And it's awful, it was to me, looking in that mirror at me, because I looked terrible. And I looked in there at the way I looked, and in my mind I looked ahead 10 years, and what I would look like then at the rate I was going, and looked back 10 years to compare myself with what I looked like 10 years before. I noticed I needed a haircut too, so I went to a barber shop where I was unknown. I just thought anybody could look at me and tell what I've been doing for the last week or two, you know. And I didn't want anybody looking at me that knew me. So I went to this barbershop and got my hair cut. And following that, I had operated a service station there, 11th Avenue and 15th Street South, Kevin and Jim. And I had to sell it when I was drafted into the armed forces. And a fellow that used to trade with me had bought it from the man I sold it to. He didn't stay there long. And this fellow sold insurance for the National Life and Accident Insurance Company. And he was a smart aleck. And he was bad to drink. Well, I didn't know that until later, but he had a 1942 red Chevrolet two-door sedan. He came in there one day, and the right side was bent up like this, like he'd been off a ditch, he'd run over a log. And I looked at him and I said, "Mac, I didn't know you drank." And Mac explained very carefully and in much detail how that happened. He wasn't drinking. Well, this time I stopped by to see him that day after I'd gotten my hair cut. I believe it was the day he told me all about that, and he was drunk. But we sat there and talked about nothing, so far as I know. I mean, nothing specifically. And it seems to me that just out of a clear sky, Max says, the only thing that ever helped me with my drinking was going to Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, this was shocking to me. I knew he was bad to drink, but I didn't know he was that bad. And I said, "My goodness, Mac, did you go to Alcoholics Anonymous?" He said, "Yeah, I didn't take a drink as long as I went." I said, "How long did you go?" He said, "About 3 months." We talked a little bit longer, and I went on home. This morning, for the first time in my life, someone had said something to me about Alcoholics Anonymous. Not one person, my wife, but old Mac. And nobody else had ever said anything to me about Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't think I was an alcoholic. An alcoholic, you know, is a person that's worse than you are about drinking. That's the way I looked at it. I wasn't as bad as those people that couldn't hold a job, you know, and couldn't stay sober, stay drunk a week or two at a time, which I had just completed. I made no conscious decision as to whether I would go see Mr. Smith or not. But I found myself in the presence of Mr. Smith at the Edgewood Hardware Company. And I said, "I understand you're an Alcoholics Anonymous." He said, "Yep, we got a meeting tonight. Would you like for me to pick you up?" And I said, "Yes," and told him where I lived. That was the whole conversation, as I recall it. I stand before you as the only man I know of that ever made his own 12-step call. I'm a slow learner. I didn't realize that for 20 years. But Mr. Smith said to me just what I needed to hear, I think. I was expecting some conversation, you know, about this business of AA and whether I really should go or not, but that was the whole conversation. He picked me up, and he took me into that, or we went into the meeting. He let me walk, and there were, I don't know, 12 or 15 people there. And I encountered something that I hadn't encountered before. I had not encountered before. And I had heard a lot of other people say they encountered the same thing. And that's what I've come to call the spirit of AA. Before anybody patted me on the head or anything, I don't recall them taking me around, introducing me or anything, I knew I was in the right place. I didn't know what it was. I had a feeling that this is the answer. But I didn't know what it was. I didn't know what the question was, really. I also had another feeling, convincing feeling, that I am among friends like I have never known in my life. And the only person I'd ever seen before in that day was that same day, Mr. Smith. We sat down there and I heard him read the preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is an informal society of ex-problem drinkers who aim to help other alcoholics recover. Not being reformers, we offer our experience only to those who want it. There are no dues or fees. Each man squares his debt of gratitude by helping other alcoholics recover. This is not the place for the curious, nor for anyone presently under the influence of alcohol, and so on. I liked that, and it's not like me to like something like that. I don't remember much that was shared in the meeting. I thought that the chairman had done a pretty good job of it. Being as inexperienced as I was sure he was. And after that, we stood up and held hands and prayed the Lord's Prayer. Ordinarily, I wouldn't have liked that. But that struck me as the very thing to do. And I had a feeling of coming back home. This was what it used to be like. And after the meeting, a young woman came up to me and smiled sweetly and said, "This is the way it sounded to me. You can do it." And I said, "Well, I hope I can, but it's going to take a lot of willpower." And she says, "Willpower doesn't have anything to do with it." I thought she was crazy. But she explained to me a little bit about her situation, just shared a little bit with me. She's still sober in AA so far, if she's still living. She was in bad health a year or two ago. Jackie T. Another one shared something with me after that meeting, who is still sober in AA. Bill C. And he said to me, he says, "Howard, don't try to take this program too fast. I stayed sober 3 months on the first step before I had my first lip." I said, "Bill, if all y'all got to offer me is telling me how to slip, I don't need AA. I can slip and slide enough without any help from AA." All of this on reflection was good for me. It was what I needed to hear. Another man there, he was one-armed. That's past tense of one-armed. Named Steve. I said to Steve, "I don't know whether I'm an alcoholic or not. I'm just up here to find out." And that was the truth. He says, "If you drink alcohol and if it interferes with any phase of your life, your health, your work, your finances, your home life, or whatever, and if you can't or won't do something about it, then you need some outside help." He didn't say, "Then you're an alcoholic." He says, "Then you need some outside help." And my outside help, I knew right then, was inside AA. And he said to me, "Can you stay sober 24 hours? Now, he didn't know who he was talking to, you know. If I could get sober, I could stay sober a month sometime. You know? So I said, "Well, of course I can." He said, "That's all you got to do. Just don't drink today. Get up tomorrow and do it again." And for the first time in my life, I realized that that's the way to stay sober, you know. I couldn't stay sober forever because I had no markers. If I was sober 6 months, I wasn't any closer to staying sober forever, or I couldn't see it, than I was when I began. So this business of staying sober a day at a time is the key to it. It's been said that success is continual progress toward a worthwhile goal. Not the arrival, it's the progress toward that goal. And if we stay sober day by day, this is continual progress toward sobriety, which is, in my opinion, a worthwhile goal. I quit trying to stay sober from now on, just today. I got a big book somehow. I don't know whether I bought it or whether they gave it to me. This was the first edition. And I had several of those, and I didn't know there's going to be another edition or that I was going to be around. I really intended to go there and make me a list of what they did to stay sober and go do it myself. I didn't need them. That was my attitude. But they were nice to me, and I felt this friendship there. So I thought I owed it to them at least to go back once or twice. But I wasn't sleeping during the next week or two or three, I don't know how long, but man, I was shaking and freezing and dying, and we didn't have any of these nice places where you go to and they detox you and let you sleep it off and wake up and you don't have to shake it out, and I'm thankful for that. I don't know whether I could have made it, not if I could get off of it real easy. But my memory may not be so good, but I sure remember that last hangover I had. I began reading that big book. And I didn't think so much of Bill's story. I thought it was pretty silly, him and his wife getting on a motorcycle riding all over the country, you know. So that didn't register much with me. But then I came to chapter 5. And I read those steps off there. And I thought, well, now they think we're a bunch of dummies and don't know anything. This is the plan of salvation, and they've changed it up a little bit, and they think I won't recognize it. And the truth is, that's what it is. What was his name? Richardson, John D. Rockefeller Jr.'s financial advisor that set up the meeting with him up there. I believe he was the one, he or Sam Shoemaker, that says, what we've got here is first century Christianity, one delivering the message to another. And that's what it is. When I came into AA, there were less than 200,000 people in AA. Now we're over 2 million. Now, if I hadn't come in, I don't know where y'all would have been. But I'm not going to take credit for more than half of those. Now, seriously, it is a tremendous thing. I read those steps. And I'll have to tell you, I didn't fully take any of them because I couldn't at the time. I did them as best I could, as much as I could, because I really didn't think I was powerless over alcohol and my life wasn't unmanageable. It took me many years before I really understood that. If I had just added to that, my life is unmanageable when I drank alcohol, it would have made perfectly sense, and I could have gone right into it. But it took me a long time, because when I wasn't drinking is what was in my mind, I did pretty well when I didn't drink, you know. And I didn't want to drink when I wasn't drinking. When they said the first drink gets you, I didn't believe that. I never got drunk on the first drink in my life. And one fellow said, well, look at it this way. If you get run over by a train, it ain't the caboose that kills you. And I understood that. And I could identify with it. As I read those steps, I got to thinking about the man that had two sons. And one of them went to his father, the younger one, and says, "Father, give to me that falls to me so that I can spend it now." So he divided unto him his inheritance, and he went off into a far country and spent his all in riotous living and became in want, and no man gave unto him. There was a famine in the land, and he joined himself to one of the citizens there of the country, who was a Hebrew man, and got a job feeding swine, slopping the hogs, being in the south. And he got so hungry, he really wanted to get in there with the swine and eat what they were eating. And then he came to himself, and he thought, "In my father's house, even the servants have bread and to spare. This is the way I was." I thought it wasn't a matter of admission that I was an alcoholic. It was a matter of recognizing it that I was, not admitting it. I didn't mind admitting it, because I'd rather be an alcoholic any day than an ordinary drunk, you know. And I think it's great that we, the dope fiends, are no longer dope fiends. They're addicts now. So if you just come to AA or go to NA or somewhere, you'll be upgraded immediately. But I was doing my steps. Now, some of y'all, it may have taken you a long time to do them. I did mine about 30 minutes. But I did them as best I could at the time, as earnestly as I can, and as well as you can when you're in a supine position on your back and not much able to get out. I couldn't read very long at a time because my eyes would burn out, and I'd rest them. And I didn't like what I was reading because it applied to me. But I had nowhere else to go, so I'd pick it up and read some more. And I made little notes that I still have about taking my steps, a realization of where I stood, and that there must be a better way, like the prodigal son. And then he made a decision, like we all had to. He said, "I will arise and go to my father. And then I'm going to take the step 4 and 5 with him. I'm going to say, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and in thy sight, and am no more worthy to be called thy son.'" He was deeply humble. He had the humility that we all need. He said, "Make me as a hired servant." And so we've got a chapter into action, which is great. And this old boy, he went into action, because the next line says, "And he arose and went." Suppose he hadn't, we never would have heard from him, would we? He arose and went. And when he was yet afar off, his father saw him and ran to meet him and put his arms around him and said to his servants, "Kill the fatted calf. My son was lost and is now found. Put a robe on his shoulder. Put a ring on his finger. And put shoes on his feet. The robe is an emblem of honor. The badge, an emblem of authority. And shoes in those days meant freedom." And that's what we were looking for. And all he had done was just started home. He just started home. When we are ready to go to any lengths, I believe, in this program, to share it with others, Our higher power will meet us more than halfway. At least that's what I found. I went through that, and I never did write down my fourth step, and I didn't share it with anybody else. I was between me and myself and God, and none of y'all's business. What about that motorcycle rider and that doctor, drunk doctor up there? What did they know about salvation? Anyway, so I didn't write it down. And nearly every meeting I'd go to, they'd talk about the fourth and fifth step. How to do it, you know. So I had to finally do it right. And I'm glad I did. In my experience, and that's all I can give you, it seems to me, and I'm convinced of this, that there's no right way or wrong way to do the steps. They're numbered for a reason, we hear, and I believe that. But Dr. Bob did step 12, you know, or 8 and 9, whatever it is, on the day he got sober, our anniversary. He disappeared and they couldn't find him. And he was out making amends all over town. And he didn't go through all those other steps. Of course, they didn't have the steps then, but they had the four absolutes, and that was worse than the steps. But the point that I'm trying to make is, if we're earnestly doing our best at the time that we take these steps, and we take them and put them into our hearts, and begin to practice them in all our affairs, wonderful things will happen. We will be amazed before we're halfway through, as you all know. I'm very thankful that God in His infinite mercy sent me to AA. I deserve no credit for going. I deserve no credit for having any honesty, open-mindedness, or willingness. But I did have tradition 3, and that was a desire to stop drinking. I was given enough honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness to do it one day. That's all it takes, in my opinion. And I'm so glad to be here. And I want to express appreciation to Milton. He's been uncommon nice to me. Milton is the hardest working AA I know of, the most diligent. YAP stands for Yale Austin Peay. That's where it started out, the corner of Yale Road and Austin Peay Highway. I nearly forgot that. Some of you might ask me, and I don't want to have to answer each one of you. But Milton does a tremendous amount of work in helping people, and a lot of them people that nobody else pays much attention to. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you travel. I changed that word. As you travel the road of happy destiny. Until then, may God bless you and keep you. Thank you very much.